Welcome to the Business of Collaboration podcast. In this podcast, we try and answer the following questions. What is innovation? How do people collaborate and work together? Who is behind the most innovative ideas, technology, and knowledge? We are curious about people. How do they innovate? How do they create a new technology or acquire new knowledge? We give them a voice and a platform to share their stories because they are superheroes.
This is your host, Jara Pascual, founder and CEO of Collab With. Today we have the true pleasure to talk to Bettina von Stamm, an innovation philosopher. Bettina is innovation philosopher, author, lecturer, and member of the board of advisors of the Global Institute of Innovation. She will be a speaker at the ISPIN conference, Innovating Our Future, on 23rd of June 2021 as a virtual event. In this podcast episode of Business of Collaboration, we will talk about her journey in innovation from design management to innovation processes to leadership to diversity to the dark side of innovation and to holistic and to complexity of innovation. Do you want to know? Listen to our podcast with Bettina von Stamm.
Welcome, Bettina von Stamm, to the podcast Business of Collaboration.
Thank you very much for the opportunity of this conversation, Jana. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you to you. You are an innovation philosopher, a catalyst, and you change people's mindset inside organizations. What is the magic you are doing inside organizations?
Well, magic sounds absolutely fantastic, and not quite sure whether it is magic indeed, but yes, as you said, it is my ambition, my aim is around changing mindsets of people. And I think we are living in a time where an open mind and the ability and willingness to change perspectives, take a different perspective, a new perspective, leave behind what we knew to have worked and to be right in the past, to let go of that. So I think changing mindset is really a very important aspect for organizations and beyond today. Yeah, so what you asked what the magic is. The magic, if there is such a thing in my work, I believe lies in my approach, which really tries to connect with individuals at a personal level. So it is not about telling them what to do. It is about telling stories that might trigger some inspiration, that might trigger some insight for them, which will lead to a change in perspective or mindset. And why is it that I use stories? I always see stories as an invitation. So if you are using facts and figures and present them on the traditional slides, it is like, you know, I am the expert and I know how things are and I'm telling you. So it is a little bit, you know, it sometimes can feel one directional. But I think that in the context, especially in the context of innovation, it is, you know, facts and figures will not convince people to change their behaviors or their mindset. Yet for me, whether innovation happens or not has got everything to do with behaviors and mindset. So in order to get people to change behaviors and mindset, you cannot use facts and figures. You need to use something that is relevant for them personally as an individual. And this is what I feel stories do. You know, stories can connect with people at the individual level. And as I said, sort of stories are an invitation. It's not, I tell you what you have to do, but look here, you know, there are different ways, there are different approaches, there are different starting points, different ways of looking at something. What do you think? Maybe it's of interest to you. So hence, stories for me are an invitation, which means that people tend to retain, or it's much more likely that they retain an open mind and are willing to engage with it rather than when I'm trying to tell them what to do.
And do you have an example of how you mix these stories when you enter into an organization or an innovation team?
Oh, yes. So maybe sort of a very simple one. A very simple one is that a lot of people leading innovation, or generally when it comes to innovation, one of the complaints is always people are unwilling to change. People resist change.
Change seems to have more innovative thinking.
No. Yes, to have more innovation, to embrace change, all these kinds of things. So people, you know, generally the saying is people resist change. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I tell them that I believe that people don't resist change but being changed, i.e., you know, many of us do not quite like to be told what to do and what not to do and how to do it. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, if you are trying to tell people to change, let me ask you a question. Who of you has ever made New Year's resolutions? And most people will at some point in their lives have made New Year's resolutions. And when you then ask the question, how many of you have succeeded? Many, many fewer hands go up. And then I say, well, so even if you personally want to change your own behavior, because that's normally what it is, it is really hard. It is really hard. You know, and then I also support that with the fact that when we develop patterns of behavior, there are grooves formed in our brain. So they are automatic pathways. So when we come into certain situation, the reaction is programmed in a way.
Yeah.
And so if you want to change your way of behaving, you need to create a new groove. You need to create a new way of behaving that becomes the new normal for our brain. And if you are half-hearted about it, if you don't really believe in it, then it's so easy to slip back into the old groove.
Yeah.
And so by that, that is something that everyone can relate to from their personal experience. And so I guess another part of the magic is that I like people to experience things. Again, it is much easier to understand. And, you know, again, one of the complaints I get from people who are trying to make their organizations more innovative is, oh, people are so reluctant to get out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
And so I, for a long time, I've run a networking group for called Innovators Anonymous for people who were leading innovation in their organizations. And one of our annual events was called Innovation Leadership Experience. And this particular session was about personal resistance to change and what is it that makes us resist change. And it was always a day and a half event. And so on Thursday, I had only told them the beginning of the day and the end of the day. And we were supposed to run through till 7 o'clock. And at 5 o'clock, I said, right. Now, as you might know, we are in a former shoe factory that has been converted into a dance studio. And guess what? I have organized a salsa dancing instructor who will teach you to dance salsa in the next 2 hours. The looks on the people, on the faces of the participants was quite something to behold, particularly as there were more men than women and everyone had to dance, which meant men had to dance salsa with other men. And as you might imagine, you know, even though they were all innovators, they were quite uncomfortable, quite a few of them. And so the next morning when we got back together, I said, so, you know, how did it feel? How did it feel to be put outside your comfort zone? Mm-hmm. You know, and so therefore, next time you ask your colleagues to get outside their comfort zone, you know how that feels. And so maybe you try to find a slightly different approach. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this really being able to understand it at a personal level is what my magic might be.
Yeah. Totally. This kind of empathy as well.
Yeah.
So, and you are You have an active participation in the ISPIN conference in June 2021.
Yes.
Again, virtual. So what is your role there this year?
Well, two I know of. The other one, I'm not quite sure, because I handed in a paper last year that was accepted, and I'm not quite sure whether I'm still presenting this paper or whether it's sort of dropped between some gaps and it doesn't really matter too much. But the two things I'm really looking forward to is, one is a panel organized by a dear friend of mine, Natalie Turner. And basically, you know, she's one of the women. When she asked me, Bettina, would you be interested? You know, have you got the time? I don't even look at what it is. I just say yes, because she's always doing really interesting stuff. So that is one of the things. And I know that she has brought a group of very interesting women together. And I look very much forward to that. And the other thing is, I have the great pleasure of interviewing a dear friend and sustainability expert of mine, Dr. Dorothea Ernst. She is an absolutely amazing woman with an absolutely amazing mind and brain. And she has been working in the field of sustainability and innovation for most of her professional life. The last role in the corporate she had was director for sustainability at Philips Lighting. And it was she who brought the topics of sustainability and innovation together for Philips through an absolutely amazing journey. And as part of that journey, she also realized that we always talk about the triple bottom line, and yet maybe it is not quite enough. And I think the reason that I like her stuff so much is in the way it connects to my approach of looking at the individual rather than the organization. Because when she developed the triple bottom line further, she integrated the person, the individual, at the center of the model. Because in the end, change will only happen if we start changing one individual at the time, so that these changes can then manifest at the team, organizational, and societal levels. So these are the things I'm very much looking forward to.
That is super interesting. So, but you have many books yourself, and you are coming from a design management path to innovation processes, to leadership, to diversity, to dark side of innovation, to holistic and complexity. What is your research story? Like, it's quite fascinating.
Well, I think one of the things about me is that I do not have a strategy. So it is not that I'm mapping out a path and then pursue the end goal. It is rather that I'm starting a journey, and then interesting things cross my field of vision. Or I observe something that I realize something is really important to what I'm doing. So, I mean, my path really was, as you said, sort of my PhD, I think, is the first official in design management. Back at the time where I did it, London Business School had a Center for Design Management, which was way ahead of the time and way before anyone realized the role that design can and should play in context of businesses, of organizations. And so I set off to try to understand why. So we know so much about new product development, as it was called at the time. Yet at the same time, the mistakes we make seem to remain the same as well. And that was sort of one of the trigger points for me, was a little booklet that was written in the 60s, which clearly laid out the things that lead to success and the things that lead to failure in new product development. And when I looked at those lists with the latest research insights from the early 90s, they were the same. And so I just thought, well, what is going on? And so this is when I started my PhD in order to understand better what gets in the way of, you know, what causes all this failure? Why don't we learn from what we know? And from that, looking at that's what it started with, the innovation processes. So I looked at the processes organization had for developing new products. And then I realized that it is not really the processes so much as whether or not people engage with it, how they engage with it, and whether these processes are really embedded and supported by other aspects of the organization, such as, you know, is there a strategy for developing new products? Are behaviors that are necessary in the development of new products, such as collaboration, such as knowledge sharing, are they supported and encouraged, or are all the individuals rewarded on an individual basis? So hence, to collaborate undermines their own progress. So that is when the shift from looking at processes to looking at the bigger context came. And that is also when I realized that, you know, new product development at the time was pretty much understood to be about R&D and tangible products. And of course, it has changed a lot since. So that expanded the field, and innovation is really, for me, a collective term that gathers all this, the conditions, the different aspects of innovation, the different levels, the different degrees of innovation that brings it all together. And then I realized that in order to have innovation rather than just great ideas, you need diversity. You know, you need people with different mindsets. If you only have people with the great ideas, nothing will ever happen.
Yeah.
So that was the shift from, you know, that's when I explored the topic of diversity. And of course, you don't look at diversity long before you realize that it comes with a lot of challenges. People with different backgrounds, different experiences, different mindset, easily misunderstand each other or even dislike each other because the other person is so different. But the beauty of it was realizing that diversity is so critical is that it meant that everyone in an organization has a role to play in innovation.
Yeah.
And it also meant that you don't need to change people's mindsets. Everyone can stay exactly with the mindset that they have, except that they need to become more open and respectful and appreciative of other people. But communicating that, conveying that, is very different from trying to change people to become more open towards risk and love ambiguity. And that's much more difficult to achieve. And then it was realizing the important role of leadership, because the leaders set the tone in an organization. If the leaders don't collaborate, then the employees are much less likely to collaborate, you know. So one thing just led to the next. And then I realized that everyone was so enthusiastic about innovation that no one was questioning or challenging it. That's when the dark side came into it. And, you know, so on it goes. It's just a never ending journey.
Yeah, totally. And you are teaching at university. What is your teaching approach to innovation?
I think it's pretty much the same as my approach to any interaction with groups of people. It is, I see my role as a facilitator, as a catalyst, as an inspirator. Rather than telling people what to do, I like to ask lots of questions. I like students to do a lot of group work. When I was teaching 4 days in a row to people who also had a full-time job, it was really full days in the morning from 9 till 6-7 o'clock in the evening, 4 days. I even introduced a movie, a full-length movie, as part of my teaching approach, because the course was innovation leadership. So the topic of leadership had a really important role. And I found this lovely movie, which demonstrates all sorts of, or facilitates discussion about all sorts of aspects of leadership. So on the third day in the evening, when everyone was really ready to, you know, to go to sleep or to stop paying attention or whatever, I used the last couple of hours of the day to show a full-length movie. And I realized that I was just showing the movie and tried to discuss it and debrief it the next morning, everyone was probably falling asleep, because it was just too relaxing. So I made that part of the coursework, but they had to write a debrief of the video and submit it to class, which meant that they, you know, that yes, they could enjoy the video, but they also had to pay attention because it was one of their assignments that they had to deliver for their coursework.
Yeah, I think that's the same approach like you are doing with the salsa class. At the end of the day, you know, you are bringing extra value in a completely different way to wake up the people as well, you know.
Yes.
Being very effective and productive.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I think that is one of the reasons that I am not the greatest fan of virtual learning worlds.
Yeah, well, that's another story, Bettina. How are you doing now, the teaching?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, not very much. And the one program that I a Master of Business Innovation, MBI, they have actually postponed the next program because for them having it face to face is so critical that they have postponed it again and again and again, and hopefully it'll take place this year. But yes, it is, you know, trying to do this experiential learning. And also for me, I always like to, you know, to really look at, you know, what I'm looking for is in people's eyes to turn inwards in a way, so that I can notice that the wheels are starting to tick over. You know, there's something happening. Some connections are being made, and that's always what I'd like to achieve. That I really reflect, because that's the starting point of internalizing things and hopefully leading to new perspectives and possibly a change in mindset. And to do that online, when people just go, you know, turn their screen off and turn it on and just disappear, and it's really, really difficult to do that. So yes, I'm looking forward to the times when I can be in the same room with people again.
You are listening to the Business of Collaboration podcast, a production from CollabWith. We are an online community helping businesses connect with experts to solve innovation challenges and create consortiums. We do this through a custom-built environment where academics, startups, and businesses collaborate to innovate and accelerate. Together, we break down the barrier between academics and the business world. Innovation has never been so accessible. And now, back to our podcast.
And like we are talking about innovation all the time, I would like to ask you about the definition. What is innovation for you?
Well, the innovation or the definition that I have been using for the last 10 odd years is innovation is to embrace the path of change to create value. Mm-hmm. And I've really, you know, I've thought about every part of that definition. The embracing the path of change. Embracing is important because if it is about values and behaviors, and if you want to change anything in that area, you need to do it very, very, very consciously and determinedly. And if you just put it up as a banner and don't do anything about it, it will never happen. So it is really important to do it very consciously and conscientiously. And then the path I mentioned that back in the 90s, innovation was mostly about R&D and tangible products. And if we think about innovation now, sort of if people realized it's about, you know, service innovation. There was this big phase where a lot of research was done into service innovation. And then we had business model innovation, and then we had social innovation. And you know, so on and on it goes. It doesn't stand still. So it is an ongoing path. It's not an endpoint.
Yeah.
And of course, change, as I always like to say, all innovation is change, but not all change is innovation.
Yeah.
So it is understanding the whole mechanisms of change and resistance to change and what encourages people to embrace change and all the rest of it is really important. And then finally, sort of that came along with my increased focus on sustainability and the worry about the dark side of innovation is the creation of value, whereby I am very, very clear that when I talk about value, it is triple bottom line value, not economic value alone.
Yeah.
And I even go so far as to say that anyone who innovates with only the economic value in mind, it is just irresponsible given the context that we live in.
Yeah, totally. And when, I think now, because you were mentioning as well the collaboration part at the beginning. What is collaboration for innovation?
I think, well, again, sort of let me share some experience. One of the most amazing outputs I have seen through what I call collaboration across boundaries. So I had the great pleasure to be involved as a juror in a number of projects which have brought design students and business students or art students and business students together. And the review process when the students gave their presentation was always absolutely fascinating, because quite a few of the teams would come up, the designers would give their presentation, move away, the business students would give their presentation.
Oh, that's and
there was just no connection. And you could see the disregard they had for each other, you know, and the disregard, disrespect, you know, oh God, you know, those crazy types, we just don't want anything to, or those boring business people, we don't have anything to do with them. And then there were a few, and really there were only ever a few, where the designer, design student and business students got up together, did a joint presentation, and I can tell you, it was absolute magic. And the outcomes were miles and miles and miles away from what the separate, you know, those teams that had worked separately had created. And so that for me, in terms of collaboration for innovation, collaboration for sustainability, this kind of innovation where people put their egos to one side, where people put their what they think they know to one side and are just open and willing to take what they have to offer and look at what someone else has to offer and really put it together in new ways that did not exist before.
Yeah.
So that for me, that is in the context of innovation and sustainability, that is the collaboration that is magic and that is required.
And now going more into the personal questions, What is the thing you are most proud of?
Possibly in having managed to stay true to myself all the time.
Ah, yeah.
Yes, and I think that's probably might have been much, much more difficult if I had ever worked for an organization. So basically, since 92, I've been working independently, which of course makes it much more easy to stay true to oneself.
Well, I don't know, how is your experience with customers? If they are not matching your values, then you are not working with them? Or how do you, you know?
Yeah.
That could be sometimes when as well you are doing partnerships and collaboration.
Yeah, I mean, I always like to say I work with people, not organizations.
Yeah.
You know, so it might be a great organization if I cannot find some common ground. It doesn't mean thinking the same or being the same. It's just having some shared values, I guess.
Yeah.
If I can't find that with people, I avoid working with them. Doesn't always work because bills have to be paid. But I would say that 99%, I really can live by that mantra.
And the failure you were learning the most from?
Well, coming from the field of innovation, I'm not quite sure that I consider anything a particular failure. You know, I mean, I am one of those people who believes that there is no such failure on only learning or things that didn't go quite as expected.
Yeah.
And actually, if there is anything, trying to remember projects that went sideways. Actually, it's probably mostly when I lost myself So when I didn't really have the courage to stay with myself, if I was trying to bend too much to become something someone else wanted me to be, and then couldn't quite deliver. So, yeah, probably the best I can come up with.
Yeah, I think this is one of the, I think it's one of the things. So now we are going to the super quick questions. What is your favorite place for holidays?
The one you see, if you had asked me that question 12 months ago or 15 months ago, I would have said, you know, because it was still sort of the top of my bucket list would have been a holiday on the Maldives, because I love the water, I love the warmth, I love good food. And sort of that would have been with a box, drop me anywhere with a box of books in a hot place with good food and I'll be happy. You can pick me up, you know, you can leave me there as long as you like. Whereas now I think I'm not quite sure I can morally and ethically justify such a trip anymore. So I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do about it. Probably buy a sauna or something like that. I don't know.
How is your mornings look like? Do you have a routine in the morning?
Yes, I have a routine. And like any good innovator, I keep breaking it, or breaking my rules, if you will. So I tell you the ideal scenario, and then, you know, for about 50% of the mornings, it might hold true. For the rest, it doesn't. I like to get up early, and I have got a cat who helps facilitate that, because he likes to get his breakfast really early. If I follow my routine, I meditate for about half an hour, and I do yoga for about half an hour, and then I have breakfast, and then I start my day. And you know, as I said, the routine. That's the routine I'd like to have every day. And I'm honest enough to say that it is not always happening that way.
And what are you doing in your spare time and your weekends?
Well, I used to have a huge garden, which took up a lot of my spare time. So I like getting my hands dirty, literally, you know, I'm crawling, you know, when I'm doing the gardening, I'm literally crawling out on all fours and pull the weeds out from under the shrubbery and, you know, look out. I definitely need a long bath after I've done my gardening. Now I live in the flat, and I am very privileged to have a big patio or terrace or balcony, whatever. And I'd look forward to getting into the garden then. That's one thing I like. The other thing I like is classical music. Sort of the big loud variety rather than the gentle quartet or whatever. I like big orchestras and a lot of noise. And of course, that's something that I've also been missing very much over the last 18 months.
Yeah. And then, well, now you answered already. What is your favorite music?
Oh, my favorite music. Yes, it is classical music. And If you want one particular favorite piece, I quickly need to check for the exact title, even though I'm listening to it as part of my meditation every morning. I better check to make sure. It is the Hymn of the Cherubim, which is a piece by Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. And there is one part of this piece which is absolute mind-blowing piece of choral a cappella music.
Thank you very much, Bettina, for this interview, or for sharing all the secrets. Like, at the end, change is about individuals and people, and how you touch them is the way to transform them.
Well, my pleasure. My pleasure. You can probably tell, it's probably got a bit longer than you might have anticipated, you know, once I get started talking. It's
That is very nice. I think if you want to learn, you have to listen. I mean, like, there is no way of 50 seconds track, you know, to have all the learnings.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, and very much looking forward to I just wanted to say seeing you at the conference, but yeah. Well, we might be able to see each other virtually anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Collaboration podcast. And remember, if you want to support what we do, then share, subscribe, and leave a review over on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. You can find a summary of this podcast at podcast.collabwave.org. See you next week.